Paper Zero, Section 11. And that's old single column, page 13. All right, it's the only intro we need. Just want to remind you that little comment I made at the end of the group last week, so that you are primed and ready to think in this mode as we start reading this first little part of this section. Notice as it starts out as a typical section with some paragraphs, and then you get into it, and then there's the blocks 1, 2, and 3 for the three different absolutes. That little bit before item number 1, a little preface to this section, is if you are primed to recognize it, is very much, as you'll see, invoking a big picture recognition of the four sections that just preceded it. Bringing in the God the Sevenfold, God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, and God the Absolute. Bringing that in that whole hierarchical structure of experiential deity and the recognition that we now have very firmly in place that, as they say, that if you're going to understand this, you have to see things both bottom up and top down, both time viewpoint and eternity viewpoint, both individuality viewpoint and unity viewpoint. And you have to be constantly ready to jump back and forth in your engagement of what they're saying from those viewpoints to try to either get the full picture that they're wanting you to get or to be able to recognize that here they want you to very much be reflecting on what you see bottom up or what you see top down to distinguish, what's the primary intent of that sentence or that paragraph. So you want to really have this just always right in front of you, ready at a moment's notice to alter your viewpoint of it to seek a clearer recognition of what they're saying. Yeah, so we're ready to start right at the beginning of section 11.
The three absolutes. When the combined thought, the universal Father and the eternal Son, functioning in the God of action, constituted the creation of the divine and central universe, the Father followed the expression of his thought into the word of his Son and the act of their conjoint executive by differentiating his Havona presence from the potentials of infinity. And these undisclosed infinity potentials remain space concealed in the unqualified absolute and divinely enshrouded in the deity absolute, while these two become one in the functioning of the universal absolute, the unrevealed infinity unity of the Paradise Father.
Okay, so just bring in a little thing that's not immediately in play, but it's a good opportunity to speak to this little distinction. When they're talking about, in this mode, the universal Father, the eternal Son, functioning in the God of action, constituted the creation of Havona. Okay, when you're thinking about that creation, that creative act, can remind yourself of some of the alternative names that we have in play for these individuals. When you're in this mode, it's really not so much immediately the universal Father and his personality circuit that's in play here. We're creating Havona. Okay, so it's the Father, not so much, it's God the Father, but not so much as the universal Father as it is the universal Creator. Why are they using these names? Remember, everything is initiated in the seven absolutes of infinity mode, but we're now up to the point where we can go beyond the immediate inroad that they're offering us to understanding and think about it in more precise terms. So you have the universal Creator, and then in this mode, there's two Creator names for the the eternal Son. You can call him the co-creator, or you can call him the coordinate creator. Now, you know coordinate's a mother word. Okay? That's not the motor end. This is the singular event where he's the co-creator. You have the universal creator and the co-creator. We haven't gotten to the point of really thinking about mother yet for the eternal Son, because where does that experiential deity of the eternal Son, you know, that makes him the eternal mother Son, where does that come from? That comes from experience in Havona. Well, we're making Havona. So, okay, you can't start calling him the coordinate creator yet, or or the eternal mother Son. Okay. So this is the universal creator combining with the co-creator, functioning in the conjoint creator, another name for the third person. So the universal creator, co-creator, conjoint creator. See, constituted the creation of the divine and central universe. So just wanted to use that as an example to bring that out. When you start talking about creating creator sons, the Father and the Son working together, okay, it's the universal creator again. Now it's the coordinate creator, because that's much more of a father-mother mode, giving rise to a creator son. Okay? And the only time that the Father functions personally as a creator is in association with the second person, with the Son. And so there's these two different modes that they're in association, either where he's the co-creator or he's the coordinate creator. Okay, yep.
So I'm sure in these realms we're talking about here, time doesn't exist the way we think of it, but would it be proper to think of this as, okay, they had this thought and they set forces in motion that actually developed the divine and central universe over what we would think of as millions of years?
And you don't want to think of it like that. I mean, it's going to come into existence by fiat, just boom, and it's going to be there.
Boom there.
Yeah, all the beings and all the worlds and everything is just all there. And then it starts experiencing after that fact. But even though, like you recognized, you don't want to think about this literally as happening in time, because this is pre-time, this is pre-finite.
Right.
But this is where you can again remind yourself that of how we technically, when you're thinking really sort of simple time sequence, the thinking method that steps along like that is rational. You have a rational sequence. Okay, we're back, but just even though we don't have that sequence, so we don't want to try to understand this in that simple, finite, rational way, temporal way. There's still a logic to it. It's still causal. You still have A causing B, and so there's a logical sequence, a causal sequence, and I invoked that. I mean, what should I call the second person here? Should I call him the co-creator or the coordinate creator? Well, he's only the coordinate creator post Havona, and we're making Havona, so it would be illogical to call him the coordinate creator. I would call him the co-creator. Okay, so there is a logical sequence here, even though from a time viewpoint, all of this happens, at zero. Time equals zero from a time viewpoint. But pre-time equals zero, there is still logic. It's still a causal reality. And so you can still understand it because you're more than just an adjutant mind. You're more than just something that has a second adjutant and can think rationally. You can think causally and logically. And it's in that sense that there's a first source and center, a second source and center, and a third source and center. They have a logical sequence to them, even though they don't have a temporal sequence to them. Okay.
Are existential things eternal?
Yes. All that is existential is eternal. And that which is experiential is either temporal or time transcending. Okay. So then, you have this notion of bringing Havona into existence, and this is a neat little thing to think about. Okay. So what do they mean that the Father is going to differentiate his Havona presence from the potentials of infinity? Okay. So initially you're thinking of the Father up there at the infinite level, totally. I'm now starting to think about bringing some sub-infinite fact into existence, like Havona. Okay. Well, if the Father's going to have any relationship to that, he has to manifest some sort of a sub-infinite level expression of himself. Okay. That's, you know, when you talk about God the sevenfold, that's what we're talking about here. The universal Father here, at the top of the sevenfold creators, is not the universal Father at the infinite level, any more than the other existential facts there are at the infinite level, the isle or the infinite spirit. You know, those are not those absolute individualities at the infinite level. They're those absolute individualities at the sub-infinite, in the sub-infinite. Okay? When you're going up through Havona and you have that sequence of discoveries, sort of graduating out of your, the presence of the Master Spirit, and then discovering supremacy, discovering the infinite spirit, discovering the eternal Son, discovering the universal Father. Now you're at the third circuit of Havona. That sequence, okay, you're not discovering the infinite spirit at the infinite level, the eternal Son at the infinite level, and the universal Father at the infinite level, okay? The only hope you have of ever doing that co-infinite thing is somewhere beyond eternity somewhere, okay? Okay. What are you discovering? You're discovering these steps of the sevenfold. You're discovering those downstepped expressions of the third, second, and first persons. And the ability for you to discover the Father as a sub-infinite fact on the third circle of Havona is what we're talking about here. He just made that possible. He downstepped himself into the sevenfold, and of course all the other existentials did as well, along with him. All right, so that's what we're talking about. Sub-infinite. And that's what they mean by the potentials of infinity, the potentials up at the infinite level. Okay? So, when they go on and say, and these undisclosed infinity potentials, that the various things that are up there at the infinite level, remain space-concealed in the unqualified absolute, divinely enshrouded in the deity absolute. Okay. What's the most immediate way for you to, everyone to understand what they're getting at there? Infinite level, and I'm seeing unqualified absolute, deity absolute. It's like, well, infinite level, I don't see it there. Those are the individuality viewpoint words. From an individuality viewpoint, the most you go up to is the absolute. Okay, it doesn't mean that there's not something beyond that, above that. And in recognition of that, we have a unity viewpoint name for those. The unity viewpoint name for the unqualified absolute is? Infinite capacity. The infinite capacity. And the deity absolute is the infinite potential. Okay, from the unity viewpoint, both those names have the word infinite in them. As a complete fact, they start at the infinite level, and reach down from there. Okay, so for the infinite capacity and the infinite potential, there is something up at the infinite level, and we're not going to go into talking about exactly what that is and how you understand that and whatnot. But just recognize that that's one of the things that you're setting aside when you take the individuality viewpoint of the seven absolutes of infinity. Okay? You're just, you're not going to try to understand how the absolute interfaces with the infinite and how that all hangs together, and it's all very complicated. And that's why you're not going to try to do it first. But see, that's what they're talking about. So while these two become one in the functioning of the universal absolute, the unrevealed infinity unity of the Paradise Father, okay? Universal absolute, individuality viewpoint name. What's the unity viewpoint name? the infinite upholder. All right? Okay, so just right there in the name, you know it's not like it somehow can't access the infinite. It starts at the infinite and is reaching down. And we know that's a very definitive phenomenon. The downstepped expressions of the infinite upholder from the infinite level. You downstep it from the infinite upholder down to the absolute level, and you have the absolute upholder, the absentite upholder, the finite upholder. You know, as you downstep it down. Okay? But we're talking about, just because you downstep it into that whole hierarchy of upholding, of mother, doesn't mean there isn't still that anchor point clear up there in the infinite level. And when you're talking about the universal father here, you're talking about the universal father that's below that infinite level. Okay? But it's still up there. The infinite upholder is one facet of God the Father, you know, of the Father. So, like they're saying there, this is, you know, has to do with the Paradise Father, like it says at the end of the sentence. The unrevealed infinity unity. See, the infinity unity. Up there at the infinite level, there is one upholder of the whole infinite level, the infinite upholder. Is that infinite upholder in any way directly recognizable or even revealable to you as a bottom-up being? You're a finite being, like we just said. If you expand up, you can only get up to the absolute. Your personality has three finite, three absentite, and one absolute dimension. You're just reaching up to the absolute. It's not like somehow you can penetrate through that and grab a hold and recognize the infinite upholder at the infinite level, that infinity unity that's up there. But it's up there. So that's what they're bringing in there. Is even, you know, it's one thing to think of those three absolutes as three reservoirs of potential, not actualized and hence not manifested. They are undisclosed, enshrouded, and what's the other word? Unrevealed. Okay. You know, if you just simply think of them as three reservoirs of potential, okay, no wonder they're those three things, on whatever, because I haven't actualized anything. But it's more than that. If you think closely about what they're saying there, it's the suggestive way they're talking. If you look at it from the unity viewpoint, you'll remember, oh yeah, there is that infinite level fact that is just not accessible to me. It's not accessible to the author of this paper. It's not accessible to an architect of the master universe. You know, it's not accessible to sub-infinite beings. Yeah. It's not accessible to the consummator of universe destiny. You know, it's accessible to the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit. Okay.
All right. Yep. Chris, we don't think of it like the overarching of the Supreme?
Well, here we're not so much thinking about the overarching elements as just we're reflecting on the full vertical structure that we can talk about finite and bringing it all the way up to the supreme and absentite and bringing it all the way up to the ultimate and co-absolute and bringing it all the way up to the absolute, but there's still the infinite level above that. You know, way, way, way above the supreme, okay? Very overarching, okay? If you use that visualization, that's what they're trying to get at. Is just never lose sight of the fact that they're, in order to have a complete understanding, if you want to really understand how this all hangs together, at some point you've got to face the interface between the absolute and the infinite. You can't just explain it all by having a top at the absolute, the seven absolutes of infinity. Okay? If you want to completely understand it, at some point you've got to challenge yourself to go beyond that absolute ceiling. Okay?
So when you think of the what are the absolutes of?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so that of infinity, you know, that's reminding you that the absolutes don't just come out of nowhere. They have a source too, the infinite level. And see that all of that is subtly there. See, if you've engaged what they give you up in deity and reality, you don't have to have gone as far as we have with it, but just knowing that you have those other names for each of these, those unity viewpoint names, and you bring them in here, it's like, oh, you know, now that I bring that in, that's much more immediately understandable what they're talking about. All right. So that's, you know, that's the basics of what they want you to get going in there. And then just the one little last thing, when I mentioned about thinking about this hierarchy of the upholders, and how the infinite upholder is very definitively an unrevealed fact just because it's up at the infinite level. But there is a revelation of the fact that there's an infinite upholder up there, not directly, but indirectly as the absolute upholder, the absonite upholder, and the finite upholder. Those are downstepped revelations of that fact. And so you can say, well, that's unrevealed, but that hierarchy is revealed. And so you leave that sentence with that little thought. The hierarchy is revealed. See, and if you leave that sentence with that thought, you'll see as you keep reading, that helps you in understanding what else they say.
I just want to clarify, since we're on the mm-hmm. infinite upholder,
mm-hmm.
isn't that where our thought adjuster comes from?
No, we'll get to that in 1 second. That's coming up. Let's not jump the gun. It is.
You've been reading it.
It is, but specifically, let's... Yeah, it is, but you'll see it. They actually bring that up specifically. We'll see. You know, we'll point that out. Okay.
Both potency of cosmic force and potency of spirit force are in process of progressive revelation realization, as the enrichment of all reality is affected by experiential growth and through the correlation of the experiential with the existential by the universal absolute. By virtue of the equiposing presence of the universal absolute, the first source and center realizes extension of experiential power, enjoys identification with his evolutionary creatures, and achieves expansion of experiential deity on the levels of supremacy, ultimacy, and absoluteness.
Okay. All right. So let's start one step at a time. Remember one of the things I said up front, the two directions. So notice how they start you in on this. You know, they gave you the unqualified and the deity in the previous paragraph, and then they jump right in the same order. They go, both potency of cosmic force and potency of spirit force. Okay, less verbosely known as space potency and spirit potency. Okay, and that's two directions. They're starting out with a real kind of simple, finite viewpoint, two direction, that you they challenge you to start thinking about when they introduce the triunities. You get to the fifth and sixth triunities, and the fifth one is about drawing energy up into cosmic action. So that's upward. The sixth triunity is about deity, you know, or spirit. You know, I think of more just kind of in simple energy spirit fashion. Spirit reaching down to engage that energy that's been drawn up into cosmic action, and giving it value and encouraging it towards divinity. Okay, so that, pull it up and reach down and engage it, action and reaction. Okay, that's being invoked there. And notice how they word that. It's in the process of progressive revelation, realization. There we go. Revelation up. You know, it's revealing it up out of the potentials. Realization, the spirit is reaching down to engage it so it can be purposed. It can go from an actuality to a reality. Okay, so revelation, realization. you know, the action, I mean, comes from above, of course, but it's invoking things to come to well up out of the potentials. And then it reaches down.
Yeah. Just keep following going up.
Okay.
The direction of it.
Right. And remember, in terms of those creative agencies that we were just talking about in the first paragraph, acting, they're acting from outside of the up and down, really. Yeah. So they can act either, you know, this way or this way, depending on what mode they're in. Okay, so they're building, they've got energy and spirit, and then they took it a notch further, and they thought, got you to think of it together, not two things, but two things that have been joined together by a hyphen, a revelation and a realization. I mean, heck of time with that. Okay, and then they take it the next step. It's like, okay, now that you have this hyphenated combination of the two together, the energy and the spirit, so this progressive revelation realization as the enrichment of all reality is effected by experiential growth. Okay, remember, growth is technically, you know, the definition is perfecting spirit. And it's, you know, that spirit in relationship with mind and matter and, you know, the whole package, like they just hyphenated together there. See, so they've taken that hyphenated package that you initially were challenged to see as two directions coming together. And then you've got the whole package now is going to be growing. It's going to altogether be an upwelling phenomenon. See, so that is affected by experiential growth and through the correlation of the experiential with the existential by the universal absolute. And we're that, now we're to the point of thinking about the supreme, you know, the almighty, you know, the growth part coming up and the mother coming down to engage it, coming down from the existential to engage this as a focalizing phenomenon of that growing fact. You know?
Well, I interrupt you if you weren't finished.
No, I wasn't, but go ahead.
Well, I just think that we sort of leapt right over a really important thing in that sentence,
yeah.
Which is, isn't this, since we're at the foreword, one of the first places in the book where they tell us the whole point of creation, which is the enrichment of reality?
Yeah, good point. I mean, we've spoken of that, you know, often over the years. You know, why is there more than the I am? You know, you start with this incredibly cool concept of the I am. Why can't you just hang there with that concept? Why do you need anything else? It's infinite. You know, it's perfectly cool in every direction and every place you go. You know, what more could you want? Other. It's seriously singular. It's infinitely singular. You know, it's missing one thing. There's one thing that could enrich that infinity, and that's other. You know, and so you have to set things up so that you can grow and foster that other. And that's what we're talking about here. So you have this experiential growth, and see, it's this correlation. Again, it's like coordination, correlation. You know, that's invoking this hand that's reaching down from what? You know, this with the existential by the universal Father? No. By the universal absolute, i.e. the infinite upholder, downstepped as the absolute upholder, the absentite upholder, the finite upholder. That's the down-reaching hand of the mother, yes. Engaging that experiential growth that's being drawn up, you know, and giving you a fuller picture of that growth, that it's not just matter that's welling up, it's matter and engaged by spirit, and hence mind, you know, between them, the whole package is growing up. And then something that is able to engage that whole comes down. And notice the word, and through the, what's the sentence we just read? It's being, you know, before group. Except in relation to to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. Okay. Now, again, remember how precisely you can engage this. You know, if they say through, they want that to be highly suggestive of something. It's not just another word. Okay. You should immediately go, oh, I've heard the word through before, and I know exactly what they're talking about here. That downreaching hand, that it's through, yes, it's through the individuality of the whole.
Universal absolute mm-hmm. in this case.
Well, but again, remember what we're doing. The words are in front of us. You know, at this point, we haven't read deity in reality yet. We're just engaged. We're in the forward here. You know, we don't know right here that from a unity viewpoint, you can call the universal absolute the infinite upholder. You know, and we haven't put together the supreme papers about, you know, okay, but that's, you know, all here. Remember, we've tried to point this out. This forward is constructed so you've got something for the initial reader, and you also have something for the very advanced reader. You know, you've got something for the reader that doesn't even exist, you know, isn't even alive yet, won't be alive for 500 years, is also here. Okay. Okay, so then notice what they do. Okay, you've got this equipoising presence of the upholder. And they say the first source and center, you know, in other words, notice how they're already kind of, they're just by using that word, they want you to kind of think a little bit more beyond just the universal Father. In other words, in the whole God the Father picture, God the Father realizes extension of experiential power, enjoys identification with his evolutionary creatures, and achieves expansion of experiential deity on the levels of supremacy, ultimacy, and absoluteness. How many things are in that sequence?
Three.
There's three things in that sequence. The Father does one, two, three things as the infinite upholder. So I go to the infinite eternally elapsed. And remember when we first brought this up, when we started the forward, immediately, David was here that night, and he goes, Chris, do you notice that for some reason you have the infinite upholder in three spots, you know, in two spots? And I said, no, actually, David, I have it in three spots. Okay. Why is the infinite upholder in three spots on this chart? You know, right there, you know, directly in the supreme level, by extension in the ultimate level, and then also as the flip side of the universal absolute here in the individuality circuit. The expression, the infinite upholder, is three times there. I wonder if that's any correlation to these three different modes. Yes, of course it is. Okay, and did I remember this sentence and construct this to match that sentence? No, I had no memory of that sentence. I constructed this logically, and then you go, oh, well, look at there. They're referring to that fact right here. Okay, what are those three facts? Okay, the first one, realizes extension of experiential power. Okay, remember the infinite capacity? I am that which extends. Okay, and how that which extends extended the infinite upholder into direct relationship with it, you know, as the reservoir of energy and power, the unqualified absolute. Okay, that first one, that's the universal Father right there in the seventh level domain, in direct association with the unqualified absolute. The next one, enjoys identification with his evolutionary creatures. Okay, that's the direct location of the infinite upholder. You know, you have the six facets of the Father. First center, the first source, the universal Father, universal creator, universal controller, infinite upholder. I mean, that's the basic six facets. And then things are, you know, expanded from there. That is one of the two reservoirs of the Father. The infinite one is one reservoir. The infinite upholder is the other reservoir. The two things that the Father bestows come from the two reservoirs. Personality from this reservoir, the thought adjuster from that reservoir. You know, what's your thought adjuster? That's an eternal identity that's stuck into you. And if you choose, you can use your personality to identify with that potential identity for your eternity. He enjoys identification. Not personal connection. Remember, it's not a person, but it is an identity. He enjoys identification with his evolutionary creatures. That's talking about, this is where the ladle gets dipped, to individuate a fragment of the infinite upholder, to make a father fragment.
And that's the mother.
No, this is the circle of the mother.
Okay, so it's not from the mother?
No. It's from part of the source of the mother. When you think about other fragments, spirit fragments, sun fragments, you know, which are actually reflectivity spirit fragments, higher mother fragments, okay, those are, when we talk about the hierarchy of the mother, okay, what's behind that whole hierarchy of the mother? You know, why is it in square brackets? It's not literally a mother. That's the father as the mother. That's where you go beyond father and mother, where the two father and mother meet. You know, it's the upholder at the infinite level, which transcends really both father and mother. We've talked about that. I mean, when you engage your thought adjuster, you're not engaging the existential core. You're engaging the experiential growth around that existential core. That's what you're engaging. You're engaging its mother likeness. And it acquires that because it's a fragment of the infinite upholder, and mother at all levels is downstepped expressions of the infinite upholder. So they, you know, they're an immediate potential synchronization. See? Okay. And then the third one, and achieves expansion of experiential deity on the levels of supremacy, ultimacy, and absoluteness. Okay. That's the third spot here. When we talk about bringing God the supreme, God the ultimate, God the absolute into existence, like we talked about extensively when we talked about the supreme, and you extend it to the ultimate and the absolute, you're talking about bringing those three potentials, universal absolute, the unqualified absolute, and the deity absolute. You're talking about bringing them together. For instance, bringing the supreme being into existence, you would talk about taking the finite potential. You know, you start with the infinite potential, downstepped expression of that, taking the finite potential to the fullness of the finite capacity, you know, and unified in supremacy by the finite upholder. See, those three things come together in that discussion. When all that comes together, you've got the supreme. You know, to actually get the supreme being, you're talking about taking that actuality, realizing it from the supreme potential as the supreme one. You know, again, downstepped expressions of the infinite one, like we've talked about. You know, they tell you the supreme being is a downstepped expression of the infinite one. That aspect of the Father, you can think of very directly as being downstepped, the absolute one. Ultimate one, supreme one, the supreme being. Okay, so all that comes together. That's what they're invoking there, and it's on the three levels. You know, and then remind yourself again that the context of all this is the universal absolute, the infinite upholder. That last one specifically saying supremacy, ultimacy, and absoluteness. So in other words, there's the infinite upholder on those three levels. What would we call the downstepped expression of the infinite upholder, you know, down to the level of absoluteness? We call that the absolute upholder, you know, et cetera. See, that's where those names come. It comes from just putting the pieces together here. They're telling you that you have the infinite upholder downstepped on three sub-infinite levels. You know, if you're going to talk about that, you need to give it a name. Well, the name is trivially obvious what to call it, okay? It's just no duh what to call it. It's the finite upholder, the absolute upholder, and the absolute upholder, okay? So that's how you put all that together.
When it is not possible fully to distinguish the deity absolute from the unqualified absolute, their supposedly combined function or coordinated presence is designated the action of the universal absolute.
And that little curious single sentence paragraph, so you could ask, why? Again, if you're a new reader, it's like, well, okay, haven't kind of already said that. All right, let me just go on. But see, as a long time reader, you know that they were trying to hint something there. They took one sentence and they made a paragraph out of it, set it apart. They were trying to emphasize something before you kept going. And what they're trying to get you to move towards is what we've just been talking about. That there's, notice how this supposedly combined function, okay, combined. Now, I take the unqualified absolute and the deity absolute. Let's do our bottom-up viewpoint when we're initially thinking about these absolutes. I take these two that they've been telling me to think about, reservoir for energy, reservoir for spirit, and I combine them, I guess. Notice how they're wording it. Supposedly combined, if you want to try to think about it with all that baggage of a bottom-up viewpoint, why don't you, but just recognize they've been telling you that you can think of the unqualified or the universal absolute as a super additive consequence of the relationship between the two. So don't think of combining them, stirring them up.
That's
flatlanders. Yeah. Think about them still being there, but having a relationship, and that relationship is expressed as a third fact, and it's super, it's above, it's super additive, so that you have something that's above those things, and hence can look down upon them and say, what we need here is we need you coordinated like this, a coordinated presence. And when I'm taking that top-down viewpoint, instead of using my bottom-up viewpoint word of universal absolute, why don't I use my unity viewpoint word, the infinite upholder? Of course, downstep to the level that I'm thinking at. See, they're trying to every way they can think of to get you to try something besides the individuality viewpoint. And if it means seeming to say the same thing again, but of course they're actually saying it in a slightly different twist, trying to see if that will get you curious enough to follow the lead. That's what's going on here. That's one of the most definitive things that's in play here in this section that you can pick up on is not just reading it at its initial face value of the seven absolutes of infinity and those individuality viewpoint words. If that was the last word in testament for all understanding, if you really thought about that and you go, well, if that was the last word in testament, they wouldn't be talking to me like this. They wouldn't be constantly sort of suggesting something beyond those. They would just deal with them very matter-of-factly. But you can see they're constantly, doing something. Why are they doing this? They're trying to get you to ask that question. Why are they being so, obtuse about this? They're not talking, that when they say supposedly combined, they don't mean in some sort of wrongly taken sense, mistaken. They're purposely doing just what I'm saying. It's like, well, okay, so if you think about it, that would be kind of magical that they would supposedly just combine. If they're absolutes, then they can't be combined in some sort of simple notion like that. That would mean they would be relatives. If they're absolutes, they're absolutely not relative, and they can't just be stirred together into a homogeneous blend. See, so that supposedly, is in there to challenge your finite viewpoint, challenge your Flatlander viewpoint, even if you take it that far.
Yeah. this paragraph that you just went over here, this is why traditional readers have just not seen what you have described to us in paper 117.
At some point, you've got to get curious enough to notice this stuff.
Right, yeah. And see, I maintain that you saw a lot of things in the foreword.
Undoubtedly, there's a super conscious, you know, association with this stuff that slowly has been distilling over the years.
Yeah. Maybe it's happening in the total.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in terms of my conscious, you know, awareness of what's been going on, you know, it's just the more I read the book, the more, you know, I had these nagging things. What on earth are they trying to say here? Why did they put that in there? You know, and I was dogged about it. I just would not say, oh, well, whatever. I wouldn't shrug it off. So I just kept going at it year after year after year until I get it, you know. And once you, as long as you're tenacious and stick with it, give the ministries within some time to see if they can congeal something in the midst of the choppy seas of our minds. You give them enough time, and you know they finally will get a little piece together, and you'll recognize it. And once you lock on to a little piece, okay, then you start to have a geometric effect happening. You know, it starts to build on itself. And it doesn't take long, and the whole thing is starting to really unravel. And there's just, like I was saying, there's no, you know, there aren't three infinite upholders on there because of a rationalization scheme. I didn't take every sentence in the book. It's like, well, how can I rationalize this sentence? Well, it has three things, so I guess I got to put it on there in three places. I don't know, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. You know, but... you know, it's a great positive feedback when you finally, you know, well, logically, you know, you'd have to be here and here, you know, and then you start engaging the book with this new coordinated knowledge, and you go, well, look at that. It's actually right there in the book, and I didn't even notice it, you know. I mean, we've done that over and over again here the last few years as we've started to get this bigger picture together. It's just amazing how many times it's almost said point blank in the book, and you had no recognition of that until you'd put it together, you know. The Paradise Trinity is truly one of infinity, quote unquote. You know, you just blow past that. You know, it's like, wait a minute. No, not kind of truly one of infinity, like it is the universal one of infinity, you know. But I didn't notice that sentence and then rationalize it by calling the Paradise Trinity the universal one of infinity. I figured that out logically, and then I recognized what the sentence was. Oh, that's what that sentence is talking about. It's a total trivial sentence. It was just stating a fact. You know, that's the mode you want to get in, where you're putting the logical recognition before the interpretation. You discover the book. Take the time to not let your thinking run away with anything. Take the time to reflect in the revelation. Reflect. If it takes 20 years, just reflect. Wait until you get a recognition of something. Then interpret it. And then start choosing based upon this new foundation of objective and subjective coordination that you have in play, this recognition and interpretation that's predicated on the recognition. Now choose. Discover, recognize, interpret, and choose. You know, and that's why they italicize that word choose. Because you should never be choosing unless the three things have preceded it. And most significantly, you shouldn't be choosing. You shouldn't be using that absolute grip that personality can do without recognition in play. Just discovering, immediately interpreting based upon the old wineskins, and then absolutizing it. You know?
That's intellectualizing.
Right. But yeah. Well, you intellectualize it and then you absolutize it. You know, you get this absolutist notion in your head, you know, that your interpretation of what you discovered, you know, is worthy of an absolute grip. You know? It's like, no, you haven't recognized. It's not worthy of anything. You know, if you haven't recognized, you know, the last place you want to start is at the absolute level, you know, and then grabbing a hold of this thing.
Is it similar similar to the traditional aha experience where the lights go on you just see something you just didn't see before.
And the only reason you can do that is because you're given a threefold recognition mechanism.
And that's the advantage if you reflect on things. Right. You're just patient with things.
Let it be until you recognize. Now start doing something with it. If you haven't had that aha recognition point, do not turn on your second adjutant. It's the worst thing you can do. It'll carry you off into never, never land. Okay? You start writing books, you know, and treatises and blogs and whatnot, and it's all based upon fallacy because you haven't recognized.
The threefold recognition.
The three cosmic intuitions. Okay. You know, the main aha is the first cosmic intuition, that logical acumen. You go, aha, of course. Right, you know, the ability to recognize fact, distinguish fact from figment, the ability to recognize the causality of something, you know, the notion you had in your head is not causal, this is causal, not that, you know, and you immediately throw out that goofy, you know, false association that you had constructed and based an entire ideology on and had vast disciples and, you know, and temples and all kinds of things. You just throw that all out because it immediately pales in comparison to the reality response that you get to a causal A-B connection as opposed to one that you have to constantly shore up by ever more rapid second adjutant, you know, calorie burning. Okay? You know, methinks thou dost, okay? Right? You know, you're using your second adjutant to try to fake reality.
That's a lot of spackle.
Right. You know, and really, really smart people can do it. You know, we all know this. Really, really smart people can zoom around something so fast that it makes it seem like it's solid, but it's still hollow. And you can see inside all of their, you know, that it's hollow. Okay? The king doesn't have any clothes on. But you know, if you don't have that insight, most likely you're going to have a lesser, you know, intellect than these really smart people. I certainly can't count on my intellect to outdo these people. I'm not as smart as all these people, but you don't need to be as smart as those people. You can see inside their ball of yarn and see that it's hollow. Okay. It's not predicated on reality. That's all you have to do.
Then your goodness is called.
And once you recognize, now start interpreting. And you'll find that you need much less brain power than they've had to do. The interpretation isn't as complicated. Okay? It doesn't, it's not only understandable by the six smartest people on the planet. Okay? To understand putting the earth at the center of the solar system and everything going around, it's really complicated. It requires really smart people to hold all of the epicycles in their head and get all the decimal points out of it. Okay, but if you put the sun at the center, it doesn't take much smarts at all to figure it out. You can teach it to a pretty young kid, you know, how that works and how to calculate where Mars is, you know, around the sun. Okay, it doesn't take a lot of second adjutant. Once you have properly recognized it, you know, objectively.
Chris, can we ask what the second adjutant is again?
Yeah, I was
as a true personal phenomenon, it's the spirit of understanding. But if you haven't brought in personality, if you haven't preceded interpretation by recognition, it's just the energy of rationalization.
Or association.
Right, it's just a basic association. It's your ability to connect dots, you know, with no notion that maybe you'd want to start with the correct first dot. You know, you just pick any old dot that you find pleasing for some reason. You know, it's round, and I like round things, so I'll start with round dots, you know, and then you just connect everything starting at that round dot. You know, that's called the dogma of the circle, and that's the epicycles of the Ptolemaic solar system, But it's just that's, you know, your second adjutant is a subjective notion that it has to be told the correct place to start. All right, let's get back to the deity absolute. So now, now we're going to just step through the three absolutes, and they're going to give you a little vignette. You know that's basically what they've got to do up here in the foreword. They're not going to go too far afield. They have to just introduce these three absolutes. So you'll see most of what's in these things is a fairly straightforward intro, but we'll see if we can pull out a little bit more.
Yeah. One, the deity absolute seems to be the all-powerful activator, while the unqualified absolute appears to be the all-efficient mechanizer of the supremely unified and ultimately coordinated universe of universes, even universes upon universes, made, making, and yet to be made.
Okay, just maybe we'll notice one little thing there. Universes upon universes? Is that a Flatlander statement? No. The only way you have universes upon universes is if you have the universe of universes in the finite, and then above that you have universes of universes in the absinite, and those are universes upon universes. You know, and we've kind of pointed that out, how many times they actually speak as if you already have absinite universes and spheres and, you know, and that whole thing. You know, and that universes upon universes mode. You know, so you can think of when all is said and done down here in the finite and you have the completed universe of universes, what's it going to look like? It's going to look like the universes of universes up in the absinite level projected down into the finite. Because that's where it comes from. That's where the pattern comes from. It's not self-patterning. Yeah, you know, it's being opposed from above. And we just read about where, you know, it starts with the aisle, and then the next expression of pattern is the central universe. You know the central universe is playing a big, going to play a big role in what the grand universe ends up looking like, because there's a billion local systems, and there's a billion Havona worlds. There's a one-to-one correspondence between each local system and each Havona world, you know, on and on and on like that. I mean, you know, it's the pattern universe. So when all is said and done in the super universe level, you're going to go, coincidentally, the super universe level looks like a downstep projection of the central universe. Yeah, of course it does. What else could it look like? Just like the finite upholder looks like a downstepped expression of the absinite upholder, who looks like a downstepped expression of the absolute upholder, who looks like a downstepped expression of the infinite upholder.
It's interesting how traversing Havona, from where we're coming from, it complements the absence of light and life here. Kind of grand space.
Right. What, you know, we pointed out, you go through the super universe and you acquire a measure of the Almighty. Then you go through Havona and you acquire a measure of the Mother. You acquire a measure of the true whole. See? Yeah. You know, you acquire what you can't acquire out here yet because it's not complete yet. So you can only get a relationship to the parts out here, but you can get a relationship to the whole in there, because that's what the whole is going to look like once there is a whole out here. All right, next thing.
The deity absolute cannot, or at least does not, react to any universe situation in a sub-absolute manner. Every response of this absolute to any given situation appears to be made in terms of the welfare of the whole creation of things and beings, not only in its present state of existence, but also in view of the infinite possibilities of all future eternity.
Okay, let's just paint that real quick. Infinite possibilities. Yeah, we were just talking about this, all coming down from the infinite. So let's go from the bottom up on this. Why would it be that it says the deity absolute cannot, or at least does not, react to any universe situation in a sub-absolute manner? And then it goes on to explain a little bit more what they mean by that, because you've got the hierarchy in play. So if you start down at the finite, you have the finite potential actualized to the fullness of the finite capacity. Remember, we're talking about the deity absolute, the infinite potential. So it's downstepped expressions. You just use the downstepped words. The infinite potential actualized to the fullness of the, or the, that the finite potential actualized to the fullness of the finite capacity. Okay, well, so now it's engages the whole. If it reflects the whole, then that which is transcendent of the finite can engage it, because the absentite can only engage the wholeness of the finite. So the moment you think about taking the finite potential to the fullness of the finite capacity, you have something that immediately has a relationship with the absentite, which, of course, the absentite potential is actualized to the fullness of the absentite capacity, so now you have a whole there. Well, that means it has a relationship to the absolute, and, of course, the absolute is to the fullness of the absolute capacity, and hence it has a relationship to the infinite. That's why it's all like they're saying. I mean, it can't do it any other way, because it's coming from the top down, of course. There's no way for that which starts at the infinite to somehow not have this relationship to wholeness as you downstepped it. And so when you talk about the mother, you talk about not just the upholder aspect of the mother, but you talk about the other two aspects, the totality attitude and the coordinator or focalizer aspect. Remember how we put, you have all three of these absolutes in play. You use that expression, the causative impregnated. Remember the infinite uphold, or the infinite potential is, I am that which intends. That's this self-purposive deity. Causative impregnated. You have a capacity impregnated with intent. You have the infinite potential and the infinite capacity in association with each other at a downstepped expression. Okay, and then it's all unified by the upholder at that level. Okay, and they're just pointing out that this is true of all these because they're coming down from the infinite. That's why you can have an individuality of the whole. You can't have anything else. I mean, these facts are fundamentally tied to the whole because they're coming top down. You downstep the infinite into the absolute and it engages the whole of the absolute because it transcends the absolute. You downstep the absolute into the absentite, it engages the whole of the absentite because it transcends the absentite. You downstep the absentite into the finite, it engages the whole of the finite because it transcends the finite. And so, they're just trying to get you to think about why you can't have anything else but an individuality of the whole. Yeah. She transcends. Right. The only way that you can have an individuality of the parts, the Father, is for the origin of that to have separated itself from this wholeness phenomenon that we're talking about here. The easiest way to appreciate this, what they're saying right here is the total will separating from total deity. And total deity's most definitive expression as an absolute is the deity absolute. I mean, that's where the separation really lies. So, if the individuality of the parts is over here, guess what's over here? The individuality of the whole. So that's what they're pointing out here. All right.
The deity absolute is that potential which was segregated from total infinite reality by the free will choice of the universal Father, and within all divinity activities. And within which all divinity activities, existential and experiential, take place. This is the qualified absolute in contradistinction to the unqualified absolute. But the universal absolute is superadditive to both in the encompassment of all absolute potential.
They invoke the total will separating from total deity. They're just like I was saying. So I don't think we need to,
right.
talk about much more. That's, you know, they're just trying to give you, you know, think about it. If you're a new reader, they've given you all kind of all these little basic fact points that you can start to think about. The whole super additive thing is a very important first thing to start reflecting on, you know, and the decades will roll by and it'll finally start to sink in.
And then once you get that concretized or crystallized to a certain extent, it's difficult to, there's some resistance to what you're saying.
But it's just like, oh, it does say super, and then when I look up the prefix super in the dictionary, it means above.
The consistency of the use of the word encompassment.
Right. Yeah. And see, I mean, we could obviously talk a lot, you know, and I don't want to totally belabor this here, but you know, just start noticing that and spend some time yourself reflecting on all that really is there in some of these sentences. It's a lot in these sentences that you don't immediately pick up on. All right.
Two. The unqualified absolute is non-personal, extra-divine, and undeified. The unqualified absolute is therefore devoid of personality, divinity, and all creator prerogatives. Neither fact nor truth, experience nor revelation, philosophy nor obscenity are able to penetrate the nature and character of this absolute without universe qualification.
The facts about the unqualified, I want to just, you know, leave for your recognition there. But you've got to notice this fascinating little kind of side thing they throw in there to challenge you. Again, about the vertical, I wanted to bring this up because John has mentioned it so much here. Neither fact nor truth. So your flatlanders, initially you're putting those side by side. Experience nor revelation. Okay, you put them side by side again. Philosophy nor absonity. And you're going, wait a minute. Now, I'm just trying to figure out this absonite thing, but I know that that has to do with something that transcends the finite. So it seems like those two words are more vertically related. Oh, maybe I should back up and rethink the other pairs of words. Because I have fact, and I have goodness, and then I have truth in the association. These are the endpoints, the relationship between fact and truth, the superadditive consequence of the relationship between fact and goodness. I think I said, between fact and goodness is truth. Truth is a superadditive phenomenon relative to fact. Okay? So just to see if you... Oh, I thought truth was just my facts. So you had fact, and then there was my facts over here to the side, the special facts. Truth, I call them. If I'm challenging, they're saying that whatever I think of truth as being, it's something that's above fact. Oh, boy, that changes everything. I don't even think I know what truth means now. Yeah. They're trying to break that right up front here, you know, or even thinking of experience nor revelation, putting revelation above experience, philosophy you can start with, science and religion, and the superadditive consequence of the relationship between the two is philosophy. But if you take science, philosophy, and religion together, there's a superadditive consequence to that, and that's moda. And that's a little bit more absonite phenomenon. See, they're bringing in that suggestion. Just notice little things like that. They threw a monkey wrench in the sequence. If they hadn't put philosophy nor absonity in there, you would have just blown right through there in Flatlander. Yeah? But if you've been paying attention, it's like, wait a minute, absonity? I thought that was something, I'm confused. They're trying to gently challenge you, see?
Let it be made clear that the unqualified absolute is a positive reality, pervading the grand universe and apparently extending with equal space presence on out into the force activities and pre-material evolutions of the staggering stretches of the space regions beyond the seven super universes. The unqualified absolute is not a mere negativism of philosophic concept predicated on the assumptions of metaphysical sophistries concerning the universality, dominance, and primacy of the unconditioned and the unqualified. The unqualified absolute is a positive universe over control in infinity. This over control is space force unlimited, but is definitely conditioned by the presence of life, mind, spirit, and personality, and is further conditioned by the will reactions and purposeful mandates of the Paradise Trinity.
Two things to spend some time reflecting on. This is where you go, oh, they've got another little thing going on here in this section, don't they? They're challenging all of the Eastern notions about deity here. They know that someone who has some experience with Eastern notions starts seeing things like unqualified absolute, and they're going, oh, yeah, well, we know about that in Hinduism, or we know about that in Brahmanism, or Buddhism. So that they're bringing that up. And of course, the sort of westernized metaphysical fuzzies that you might draw from that even. So see that what they're saying there is the unqualified absolute is not some sort of a negativism. You know, it's not some sort of the absence of something.
It's not the void.
It's not the void, and it's also not, well, if you just let go of all conditions and qualifications. So you notice that primacy of the unconditioned and unqualified. Imagine letting go of anything that might condition or qualify. And now you have the absolute. This is one of the founding thoughts, okay, that they're trying to challenge you to do there. When you don't have a personal God, this is the transcendent that you're trying to recognize, this notion of the unconditioned and unqualified. And so you have this completely unconditioned and unqualified fact that you you get in your head, and then you just in some mystical way condition and qualification come into existence.
Well, they have to bring in an artificial focal point. They realize you need a focal point. You can't just...
The rationalization just, But see, notice that they say sophistry. Because see, this initial, there are these absolutes. And so you're going to get a reality response, especially to the unqualified absolute when you try to sort of, it's like, well, if there wasn't deity, what would there be? Well, there is actually something like that, but it's not the absence of deity, it's the presence of something else, more fundamentally. But if you start there, if you have no focusing of God in there, this can be very seductive. It's a sophistry, not just a fallacy. It can seduce you into diffusing yourself into the unqualified.
Well, doesn't that make you susceptible more to material gravity because you're not being pulled by spiritual gravity anymore?
Yeah, see, not only are you kind of sort of saying, let's not try to have a real solid spirit point that spirit gravity can grab a hold of, that's bad enough, and so you just have material gravity. But then, before you let material gravity have its way with you, you spread yourself as thin as possible so that you're just tissue paper, and then it starts pulling on it and ripping the tissue paper. Right? And you get this fractured consciousness. Yeah. See, that's why they use such a strong word in there of sophistry. They're reminding you that you get this. You're playing with some dangerous stuff here if you diffuse yourself like this. Okay, and then the other thing is, notice right at the end there. You have the matter, and then above that there's a life animation. Above that there's a mind. Above that there's a spirit. Above that there's a personality. So you have that whole hierarchy that they're bringing in there, and then one other thing they throw in. Because you not only have all the things, high and low, personality things, energy things, and everything in between, but you have the focalizer, the coordinator. When they talk about the will reactions and purposeful mandates of the Paradise Trinity, do you remember we we talked about that. That's right at the very end of paper 118, the will, actions, and purpose. See how they're invoking the fact that the Paradise Trinity is one face of the original, one face of the universal one of infinity. And the universal one of infinity is the relationship of element one to element two to element three to element one. You know, and you have that whole bit of predicated on the desired results, that which acts has the will to act on that which reacts, you know, which gives those actions a causal nature, which in turn gives that which results purpose. Taking you all the way around the circle, okay? You know, that's the Paradise Trinity, and it's the Paradise Trinity in combination with the Upholder that gets you the Mother. And that's, you know, so here they're really bringing, you know, they're bringing in the full piece, the full, you know, the other piece, the full picture, hence, of the Mother. And you have both the Upholder and the Trinity in play. You know, because technically, you know, how do you get the infinite Upholder downstepped? Via the functioning of the Trinity in the hierarchy. The Trinity of supremacy in relationship to the infinite Upholder is the finite Upholder. You know, the infinite Upholder doesn't self-downstep. It's downstepped by the hierarchical fact of the Trinity. And why is the Trinity fundamentally hierarchical? Because remember how they tell you that's just the way it is. The Trinity is on all levels. That's what it is by nature. It's the universal one of infinity, not just the infinite one. So it's not just, you know, sort of, it's everywhere to begin with. It isn't starting at the infinite and has to get downstepped from there. It's universal one of infinity. Okay. So that's bringing in that. You know, so if you, you know, there's a real example of, you know, see that's almost a direct parallel with something that's clear up at the end of paper 118. See, and, you know, the initial reader has no clue of such a thing, but it's there for you to recognize after years of study.
We are convinced that the unqualified absolute is not an undifferentiated and all-pervading influence comparable either to pantheistic concepts of metaphysics or to the sometime ether hypothesis of science. The unqualified absolute is force unlimited and deity conditioned, but we do not fully perceive the relation of this absolute to the spirit realities of the universes.
So again, stressing the fuzziness there of, you know, don't start thinking that this unqualified absolute is, oh yeah, I remember, that's what they mean by, that's the truth of pantheism, you know, where there isn't a God. What you actually have is all of the, you know, all of the laws and forces and manifestations are just a self-emerging universe in a mystical way. Okay, that's really God, you know. In other words, there isn't really a God. That's pantheism. You know, we're all theism. In other words, there is no God. Everything is God. Okay. You know, so not that sort of notion, or, you know, think, oh, wait a minute. You know, the scientists have been playing with this notion that there's some plenum, there's something that permeates everything, and it's this very static notion, this ether. And when they do use the word static when they talk about the unqualified, that must be what they're talking about. No, that's not that either. Okay, it's the unqualified absolute is a positive universe over control. Now, that doesn't sound very static. Yeah. Over control in infinity. Because let's use the unity viewpoint word. It's the infinite capacity. And up there on the infinite level, in infinity, okay, it is a facet of deity. The infinite capacity is a facet of deity. And it's an over control, a universe over control as that facet of deity. It's an extremely transcendent fact, though. Because remember, when you go to the unity viewpoint, instead of thinking of it as deity absolute, unqualified absolute, super additive is universal absolute. From the unity viewpoint, the deity viewpoint, you start with the two deity facets. The deity absolute and the universal absolute. And the super additive consequences, the relationship between the two is the unqualified absolute above that deity. Something that transcends deity, not something that is somehow just a negativism of the absence of deity. No, it actually is transcendent of deity in that viewpoint. The non-deity absolute is a super additive consequence of the two deity absolutes. It's like, wow, that really changes everything. No wonder they would describe it but we do not fully perceive the relation of this absolute to the spirit realities of the universe. You know, they're thinking about, well, you have the deity absolute, and from that you derive spirit. Well, then the unqualified is on the other side of that. So it's like, well, I know, how does that connect together? Yeah.
So these divine counselors, they don't have thought adjusters.
No.
So there's some things that potentially.
Well,
we.
Perhaps, but don't, you know, remember, yeah, don't run too far with it. Remember when they talk like this. They know about everything that I've figured
right.
out. They know about it, but they don't know it. They can't directly, engage that which is so incredibly transcendent of what they can. You know, they can directly engage the deity. I mean, many times I've stood in the very presence. Okay, I mean, he knows about engaging deity
right.
and spirit, but something that's above that.
There's some things
right.
they have to take by faith.
Right. And they have to be taught, so they understand them. But it's like, well, okay, but I still don't really understand. How does that actually fit into the picture? Okay.
We won't understand unless we take that top-down approach.
Right. You know, we can, you know, and, you know, we're never going to know it experientially either, you know, at least short of, you know, the ends of eternity, but you can begin to know about it. You can get a logical picture put together and understand that super additive thing. That's completely understandable. Okay, so now let's do the universal absolute. What do they give you next? A little vignette on the universal absolute.
3. The universal absolute, we logically deduce, was inevitable in the universal father's absolute free will act of differentiating universe realities into deified and undeified, personalizable and non-personalizable values. The universal absolute is the deity phenomenon indicative of the resolution of the tension created by the free will act of thus differentiating universe reality, and functions as the associative coordinator of these sum totals of existential potentialities.
Okay, everything except for that last little bit there after that comma, that last little bit. Notice how, oh yeah, okay, so it's the 7 absolutes of infinity picture. I've got the 2 absolutes and the super additive consequences, the universal, you know, and everything seems pretty straightforward. And then notice what they throw in there for the more advanced recognizer. And functions, okay, wait a minute, I thought it was a reservoir. Doesn't a reservoir just sit there and wait to be actualized? Now you're saying it functions? Well, if you flip it around, it's the infinite upholder, and it upholds, it functions, and it functions as the associated coordinator, okay, the mother word again, okay. And what does it do? Remember, it's the coordinator, it's the focalizer, you know, it's bringing into existence the focalization of the summation, yeah, see, these sum totals. See, it's all right there, okay? That's just what we went over and over. We saw him, you know, repeat that over and over again up in the Supreme Papers, trying to get you to think about that, you know, summation, focalization, summarizer, focalizer. It's right there, same thing, same picture. You got the Almighty on the one side and the Mother on the other.
It's a system of usage.
Right, very precise system of usage of the language so that you can put all the pieces together. All right.
The tension presence of the universal absolute signifies the adjustment of differential between deity reality and undeified reality, inherent in the separation of the dynamics of free will divinity from the statics of unqualified infinity.
We talked about that. Let me just keep rolling there.
Always remember, potential infinity is absolute and inseparable from eternity. Actual infinity in time can never be anything but partial and must therefore be non-absolute. Neither can infinity of actual personality be absolute except in unqualified deity. And it is the differential of infinity potential in the unqualified absolute and the deity absolute that externalizes the universal absolute.
Eternalizes
the universal absolute, thereby making it cosmically possible to have material universes in space and spirituality possible to have finite personalities in time.
This is a really cool thing. And in fact, it begins with always remember. And it's, if you think about this, the always remember part is the non sequitur they're throwing in right up front, because you read the rest of it, and if you're an initial understander of the revelation, you're going, well, okay, even though it's really complicated, I've picked through it, I've parsed these sentences and I've got it all dissected and I think I understand. Why did they stick always remember in front of this? Okay. It's like, okay, I think I get it, but is it that transcendent, that they should say always remember? Okay, look at how they try to lead you into something a little bit bigger here. It is kind of, isn't it? So potential infinity is absolute and inseparable from eternity. What the heck does that mean? Okay, I'm. If I think of myself in the fifth level domain, the finite, the evolutional, and I'm heading towards eternity, I'm going around the ellipse through supremacy and ultimacy to absoluteness. Okay, if I'm going to get to the point where I have the cosmos infinite, and I lost my place. Where is it here? Oh, here. So potential infinity. If I'm going to actualize the cosmos infinite, I've got to get all the way to the absolute. I've got to bring it all the way around through supremacy, ultimacy to absoluteness. Which means I've got to get all the way to eternity. Okay, so that's what that's saying. Actual infinity in time can never be anything but partial and must therefore be non-absolute. That's just flipping that recognition around. Can you see that? If to get actual infinity, you've got to go all the way to eternity in absoluteness here. Then in time, which is not eternity, in time, I can't have actual infinity. The cosmos infinite can't exist right now. Okay? I just have to have parts of it. I have parts of the cosmos infinite. And I've got non-absolute, like the finite. Okay, so they're just making a little logical thing, looking at it, the same thought in both directions. You're going, okay, so what's a, now that I've sorted that out, I'm not thinking, always remember that. This just doesn't seem to be burning. Neither can infinity of actual personality be absolute except in unqualified deity. Okay, so what are they referring to there? Okay, so it's like if we don't think of infinity in the material sense, the cosmos infinite, or the energy sense or whatever, what about if I just think of an infinite personality, like the eternal sun? Neither can infinity of actual personality be absolute, he's absolute spirit, except in unqualified deity. Yeah, nothing comes from the unqualified absolute to make the body of the eternal sun. It's all coming from the deity absolute to make the body, the purely spirit body of the eternal sun. So that's really just saying that. Okay, and that's still not seeming like it's worthy of always remember. That's just a kind of a simple little logical picture. And it is the differential of infinity potential in the unqualified absolute and the deity absolute. It eternalizes the universal absolute. Well, they've already said that several times, so why would they say always remember about that? Thereby making it cosmically possible to have material universes in space and spiritually possible to have finite personalities in time. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. That whole thing, I start with the bifurcation of the infinitude into the unqualified absolute and the deity absolute. So I create a separation. I create a place for universes to be. You know, if I actually separate, so there's a gap where universes could be. There's space. And then I create a whole sequence of events that resolves the tension of that separation. So there's the time. And, you know, I don't have something that just balls it all up into one thing. I can actually be this finite temporal being that steps along. Okay, I'm still not getting why I should always remember all that. That's kind of just a basic picture of the finite viewpoint. Why on earth do they have always remember in front of this? What's the bigger picture? You know, in order to make all that happen, what does total will have to do? Total will is to separate itself from total deity. The Father has to pull himself out of the whole in order for any of that stuff we just talked about there to come into existence. And if he pulls himself out of the whole, who's going to hold me?
The one you should be always remembering.
The one you should be always remembering. This distinction is vital. Right?
Nice setup.
Eh? Yeah, that's what's behind that. See, and they purposely put that in front of there so that it'll dog you all your days if you're really interested in the revelation until you finally figure out why on earth they stuck always remember in front of a seemingly, you know, straightforward, once you pull it all apart, sentence. Yeah. Or a set of sentences. Okay, see, who makes it cosmically possible to have material universes in space and spiritually possible to have finite personalities in time? Something that holds them? Yeah. Universes don't just float in that separation on nothing.
Looks like
someone has to hold them.
Right.
Someone has to hold the things and beings. Always remember. Eh? Why is it that you can be someone's holding you? And as soon as you see that, then your life changes. This distinction is vital. You see yourself as having a mother and not just a father. You have a spiritual father and a cosmic mother. I have another parent. Okay? Always remember that. You have two parents. Don't fixate on the father. Always remember there's another parent who's just as important. And that's why it says always remember.
The finite can coexist in the cosmos along with the infinite only because the associative presence of the universal absolute so perfectly equalizes the tensions between time and eternity. Finity and infinity. Reality potential and reality actuality. Paradise and space, man and God. Associatively, the universal absolute constitutes the identification of the zone of progressing evolutional reality existent in the time-space and in the transcended time-space, universes of sub-infinite deity manifestation.
Okay, the God within, existent in, God of immanence, God the Mother. Okay, you know, and it says universal absolute twice, flip it around, unity viewpoint, the infinite upholder. Okay? Yeah. You know, it's only because of the Mother that the finite can coexist in the cosmos along with the infinite. You can't be in direct exposure to the infinite, okay? Okay? Someone needs to put a womb around you. Someone needs to mother you, okay? You can't be in direct connection to the infinite. Now, talking about differentials, take the lowliest finite and plug it right into a socket in the infinite. And what do you think is going to happen to you? Okay, and you're gone. Okay?
I wish I had remembered.
You can't be directly exposed to the infinite. Right. All right, this is what they're getting at. She's the key. See, and it's right, it's there for you to recognize once you start bringing, you know, all you have to do is just start bringing in the unity words for all these and then trying to understand it with the unity words in the sentence instead of the individuality words. Yeah. It's like, wow, this really is different when you look at it from the top-down point of view. You know, and then you start putting the top-down and the bottom-up views together. Right? That's what they're trying to get you to do. Yeah.
The universal absolute is the potential of the static dynamic deity functionality realizable on time eternity levels as finite absolute values and as possible of experiential existential approach. This incomprehensible aspect of deity may be static, potential, and associative, but it is not experientially creative or evolutional as concerns the intelligent personalities now functioning in the master universe.
There's a lot, you know, you can just see again of emphasizing what we've already firmly recognized as this mother, is this is this buffer between you and the infinite. But notice that they're invoking the functional levels of deity there. You've got maybe static, potential, and associative. That's levels 1, 2, and 3. But it's not experientially creative or evolutional. That's 4 and 5. Okay, so your first thought is to try to understand, okay, maybe that, but it's not that. But before you start thinking about that, notice the obvious thing. They mentioned 5 of the functional levels and didn't mention 2 of them. Okay, so in other words, it's not. You definitely don't want to try to think of it as in some sort of immediate way in the 4th and 5th. Now maybe you could think about it in 1, 2, and 3. So, read between the lines. If it says it may be in the static, potential, and associative, that means it is in the supreme and the ultimate. Where is the infinite upholder? In the 6th and 7th, in the supreme and the ultimate. Okay? It is directly there. That's what's between the lines of that statement. Yeah, sure enough, when I look on the chart, that's where it is. It's in those two. And then they're saying, now, obviously, as the infinite upholder, you know, the infinite upholder at the infinite level is going to have some relationship to the other infinite level things in the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. But when you're talking about the creative and the evolutional, the 4th and the 5th, when you're talking about the universal creator and the universal controller, for instance, or you're talking about the triunities, how the infinite engages the sub-infinite, you know, as a functional phenomenon. You obviously have to be sub-infinite in order to be engaged there. So you're not, you know, look at how they word it. They say, but is not experientially creative or evolution. Okay? You know, so they're just trying to get you to think, you know, initially you're trying to understand all this complexity. It's like, well, okay, I can understand that I have a creator. Okay, I get that. And I mean, that creator has to come down and directly engage the finite in order to create me. So I'm obviously not going to experience the infinite upholder on the infinite level in that phenomenon of the creator reaching down and creating me in the finite. That's okay. That's pretty obvious now that I think about it. You know, that's not going to be where I'm going to look for understanding what the infinite upholder is. And also just right there with me controlling the evolutional phenomenon. You're down there in the trenches of the finite. Logically, I'm not going to look for the infinite level down in the trenches of the finite either. Okay. So really, when you think about it, it's not, you know, it's not really saying anything too profound sort of immediately, but just, again, notice what it doesn't say. And that's the key. They mentioned five of the seven levels, and you should go, well, wait, what about the other two? You know, if it may be in those and definitely it is in those, what does that mean about the other? It is in those two. Sure enough, that's where it is. It's another little clue between the lines. All right, let's see. All right, so that wraps up the three absolutes. Then they have this little epilogue here about the absolute.
The absolute. The two absolutes, qualified and unqualified, while so apparently divergent in function as they may be observed by mind creatures, are perfectly and divinely unified in and by the universal absolute. In the last analysis and in the final comprehension, all three are one absolute. On sub-infinite levels, they are functionally differentiated, but in infinity, they are one.
Okay. Some curiosity. Again, a lot of sort of, I've got that whole bit. They keep repeating it. Qualified and unqualified. Relationship between the two is universal. Yeah. But what else do they say there? They throw in a couple of curious little things, like we've pointed these out to look for these. From a simple individuality viewpoint, where I've got the two, the deity absolute, the unqualified absolute, in relation, I have the universal. I would think of the universal as being, you know, by the universal, the tension is resolved. But it doesn't just say by, it also says in. Why? Well, you know, if you flip it around, it's the infinite upholder and everything is in the infinity unity, okay, of the infinite upholder. See, so it's really getting you to think about it both. Both in the unity and the individuality viewpoints, even though they're talking basically in the individuality viewpoint, even though they're basically talking in the seven absolutes of infinity picture, they throw in little things like that. And then why on earth do they have one in all caps? Well, maybe they were wanting to scream at me. For Pete's sake, it's one. No, that isn't. I don't get a reality response to that. There must be some reason why they're really super emphasizing the word one here. Yes, because this is all in the context of the absolute. If we aren't thinking with these three reservoirs and all the stuff with the three reservoirs and all this sort of stuff, if we just go to, you know, into infinity and we have the absolute, so you have that deity. And you can think about personalizing that deity as God the Absolute. Yeah. Again, remember, it's, you know, you have the reservoirs, but you also have the Absolute. That's why this footnote is here. You know, this isn't just the concept of those three together. There's a separate box with just it in it. There's the Absolute. And the personalization of that deity is God the Absolute. If you take the Supreme, and the personalization of that deity is God the Supreme, or the Supreme Being, or the downstepped expression of the Infinite One to the Supreme level, we call him the Supreme One. The God the Ultimate would be the Ultimate One. God the Absolute would be the Absolute One. Right. See, they put that one in there so it'll nag at you till you find, oh yeah, there's the infinite one deity, and it has to have downstepped expressions too. If I have the infinite one, I've got to have an absolute one, and and not only do you have those very direct understandable personal realization ones, where you have the absolute one and the ultimate one and the supreme one, you also have the co-absolute one, the consummator of universe destiny. And you have the absonite one, the chief of the transcendentalists, the chief architect. Have you ever stopped to think about that statement? It doesn't just say he's chief of the architects. It says he's chief of the transcendentalists, of all absonite beings. He's the chief absonite being. He's the absonite one. about him, all of absonity, revolves. To really think. I mean, that chief architect, that's a serious being. Okay, he's the absonite one. Out of all of absonity, there's one. Okay, and that's why he's on paradise. Yeah, he's that paradise one. Okay, that's why they've done that. They want you to try to figure out, why on earth. So we see we've done it. We've got all these things at the infinite level. We have the infinite potential and the infinite capacity and the infinite upholder and the infinite one. And we've begun to contemplate the full hierarchies, the full downstepped expressions of all those. Oneness coming down, potential coming down, upholding coming down, capacity coming down. Yeah. That's the unity viewpoint.
Yeah.
It has that full downwelling hierarchical picture. The bottom, the individuality viewpoint just has these seven absolutes and it's kind of limited. Right.
We never use the term the absolute as a negation of ought or as a denial of anything. Neither do we regard the universal absolute as a self-determinative, a sort of pantheistic and impersonal deity. The absolute, in all that pertains to universe personality, is strictly Trinity limited and deity dominated.
Okay, so they're obviously very worried about this distortion of meaning that they know is in play by revealing the three absolutes to us. They end with a parting stab at that. Do not think of even the universal absolute as the answer to your self-determinative pantheistic deity notions. Okay, there is no such thing, so you don't need a rationalization for those things. So it obviously was very heavily weighing on their minds, this potential pitfall in the revelation. And obviously, the last thing they stress is the universal absolute, because they mentioned it as a functioning fact, and not just a reservoir-like fact. Yeah. Then that last statement, you should go, huh? The absolute, in all that pertains to universe personality, is strictly Trinity limited and deity dominated. How do I understand that? Why is that statement true? We actually mentioned that one back when we went through total deity. And once you've got it all in front of you on the ellipse here, think of the picture that we're painting here in this little vignette about the absolute. I mean, it's mostly individuality viewpoint, taking the three absolutes and bringing them together into one. Okay, so let's just do that. I've got an absolute here, in the sixth level, one in the seventh level, one over here in the second level. Okay, and I'm going forward in time this way. So let's just, let's pick up the universal absolute here, move it forward, combine it with the unqualified absolute, and bring it all the way around to the apex here of the deity absolute and bring the three together. Well, those two are right next to each other, but in order to get those two that I'm imagining holding together as one and get it over and combine it with this one, I've got to pass through the first level domain. I've got to pass through the presence of something called the Paradise Trinity. Trinity Limited. You can't connect them except through the Trinity. So that phenomenon of bringing them together is obviously going to be limited by the gatekeeper of the Trinity. They're only going to be connected via the Trinity. Of course, we know in the bigger context that's all related to the Mother and, you know, those issues. And then deity dominated. Which one is the, was the at the apex? The deity absolute.
Why do they use the word limited?
Limited because it's there's a pathway. I mean, if there's, you know, I'm limited by the path between point A and point B. I can't just go, well, I don't like that. I'm going to go in. No. You know, if there's a path that you can only, it's only through the individuality of the whole. Remember, Paradise Trinity is the source of the individuality of the whole, source of the Mother. Think about the parallel, see, that we're invoking on this highest level here. And just bringing those three absolutes together. It's only through the Trinity. Well, there's certainly that, you know, the whole bit about the Justice Administration. But just in a simple, factual way, what they're pointing out there with bringing those three absolutes together, it's just like, I would like to bring myself together with Katie. Not in some imaginary way. Truly, I would like to connect the two of us so that there can be a super additive consequence to a true relationship between us. Well, if I, you know, I think, well, how am I going to do that? Well, maybe if I'm just really zealous about it, maybe if I just click my ruby red slippers together, maybe, I mean, well, is it mystical? You know, is it magical? Is it just a matter of sheer force of will? No. This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other. Not truly connected with each other, except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. If I want a true relationship with Katie, I perforce have to go through her, just like they have to go through the Trinity to get together. If I do it in my mind any other way, I'm deceiving myself. I haven't truly created a relationship. I can't create a true relationship to Katie via the Father.
So her, you mean God the Mother?
Only through God the Mother can I create a true relationship with Katie. Because the more I grab a hold of what the Father gave me, and the more she grabs a hold of what the Father gave her, the more absolutely distinct we are and unrelated. I mean, at least before I start gripping, using my personality, and I'm just a blob of molecules, at least they're the same basic hydrocarbons that she has, and we have that in common. And so the thinking that we have based upon that basic hydrocarbon foundation might be kind of similar. If we have a similar genetic, you know, makeup and stuff, we might think a bit alike. But if I'm going to truly, personally connect to her, I can't do that by a just innate fact of what I am molecularly or mindily. And I can't even do that by saying, well, it must be personal and spiritual, you know, then. So let me just grab a hold of that absolutely unique personality. Whoops, the entire universe just disappeared. That isn't what I was looking for. I was looking for more connectivity. The Father doesn't connect you to others. The Father makes you an absolutely distinct point. So then now that if you do, through the Mother, connect to someone else, it has true relationship character. Because unless you're truly distinct, there isn't a true relationship. You know, 15 hydrocarbons plus 15 hydrocarbons is just 30 hydrocarbons. There's no super additive consequence. It's additive. It's only through her that the super additive can happen. Remember this. Always remember. This distinction is vital. See, that's what's really behind this. Again, is the Mother.
Because they're so uniquely different. That gives you the potential.
Right. The Father potentializes us. Now actualize that potential. Actually, really, truly, not just in your imagination. I think we're all one. No, you're not. Okay? It doesn't happen by wishful thinking. It happens by becoming truly a person, and through her, becoming the brotherhood of man. The Father makes you kindred spirits. The Mother makes you the brotherhood of man, kindred minds. Okay? You're not going to get the brotherhood of man via only the Father. So always remember.
That's why you have to do something as well as be something.
Right. The Father makes you be something, but only through the Mother can you do something like actualize the brotherhood of man. Okay.
You're saying that through the Mother's service and love and the fruits of the Spirit, that's where...
No, it's through the second consecration. I have a connection to the Father because I consecrate my will to the perfect will of God the Father. How do I bring the Mother into play? More consecration of will? No. No, the will is all about the Father. How do I get the Mother into my life? I have to consecrate my mind to the cosmic harmony of God the Mother. All the willing in the world doesn't make my mind a downstepped expression of cosmic harmony. It's just a chaotic sea of agitated mind with a will sitting next to it. You have to reform this mind, not just consecrate your will. You have to make this mind into a harmony instead of a cacophony. And if you make that mind a harmony, if I make that mind a harmony, and if Katie makes her mind a harmony, then through her, we have a relationship. We're kindred minds, true minds. Remember what Jesus, just the foundation of getting up there, he called the level of mind, the third level of meaning. He said, I find you mostly functioning in the first two levels of meaning, i.e., I find you functioning sub-mindedly relative to the cosmos. I find you in a state that the Mother cannot connect you together. And you wonder why there's not peace on earth. You're not connectable. You're not peaceifiable. It's like, well, of course I am. I have all the desire for peace. No, your mind is chaos. Chaos is not peace. Your mind is full of fear and superstition, and all kinds of baggage from your childhood. And that is not connectable through the Mother. And hence, it's not connectable to others. There's no brotherhood of man potential in you. I come to lift you up, Jesus said. I come to get you up to where we can work with you. You need peace on earth, more and more so every generation. So you have to supply the favorable conditions. And those favorable conditions are consecration of your mind to the cosmic harmony of God the Mother. And then she will grow you, and she will grow us into the brotherhood of man. This distinction is vital. All right, I know we went way late, but... We want to bring this alive. I mean, the three absolutes, really? You read that title, and it's like, okay, skipping. The Trinities, okay, let's skip that too. We've got to see why these things are here. Why this is important. Why it says always remember. Okay, so we need to allow ourselves to take the time to really feel this. I hope everyone feels this a little more definitively, that this is important stuff to remember, to understand, and then to remember how the universe is really put together and why it's so relevant to your life. It's not just about intellectualism. I can name the seven absolutes of infinity. Okay, so what? We want to make this revelation come alive for us. We want to have a relationship to the truth of the revelation. What we've been talking about passionately tonight is the truth of this paragraph, of this section, not just the facts of this section. Okay, we want a relationship with the truth of it, because they told us that the reason they wrote this section is to reveal truth, not to reveal the facts of the three absolutes. So don't just acquire the facts of the three absolutes. Acquire, find the truth. You know? That's what they're challenging us to do. And I, the only way I can think of doing it is with some passion like this. You know? So I hope everyone kind of picks up on that. All right, so we'll we're gonna get the acknowledgement. Yeah, we'll finish it up next time. The acknowledgement is fun. The Trinities, you know, they're getting pretty far afield, and so just get these facts, but we'll try to bring them alive a little bit. But we'll wrap up the foreword next time, and then we'll go to the Pentateuch on the Father. All right, let's take a moment here.